Okay, so we're going to start with the question of mental health. And Peter Catt, you've got the first question, so I'd invite you to direct that question and to ask it, please.
Yeah, thank you, David, and thank you to the candidates. My first question is for Senator Mason, if I may. Senator Mason, you'll be aware that mental health has been labelled as a health priority for 18 years. And both major parties have announced single initiatives during this campaign which health experts have acknowledged are good, but also label as inadequate. So my question is about strategy, and that's the key word, strategy. What strategy do you have for achieving the objective of bringing the provision of mental health services to the level of 85%, which is the level, say, that applies to diabetes at present? So what's the strategy for bringing the provision of mental health services to 85% plus by 2020? Thank you.
A bit of thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, pick up the microphone. I have such a loud voice. As Senator Moore would know, I really need a microphone. But, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for having me here this evening.
You're feeding back there.
What's that?
It's a bit feedback there.
Is that?
What I might suggest you do is pick it up and hold it.
Hold it.
Is that okay? Then share with Wendy. Can Libby and Claire share? Good on you.
Do I need this microphone?
I do.
All right. So thank you for having me here this evening. You mentioned, David, that I was briefly a parliamentary secretary right at the end of the Howard government, the last 6 months actually. And the job actually was as parliamentary secretary for health under Tony Abbott. And my principal responsibility was mental health. And you are right, there has been neglect, I think it's fair to say, for many years. In the region of mental health. What the Howard government did was spend, what, about nearly $1.9 billion on mental health, and primarily what we did was spend a lot of that money setting up Headspace. There was Medicare rebates for psychologists and better education for general practitioners. That was sort of the principal elements of what the $1.9 billion that John Howard put into that scheme. And it was by far the greatest expenditure on mental health in our federal history. What Tony Abbott announced the other day was, I've got the papers right here, I think it's $1.5 billion. And $1.5 billion he's announced that he'll be spending, and that's to provide 800 new acute and subacute mental health beds, specifically to support the early psychosis intervention centres. And the reason for that is this, that about one in five Australians suffers a mental health episode every year. Peter, that's right, isn't it? But one in five, and primarily among young people. And all the evidence is that if we attack the problem when people are young, it becomes much less expensive then than later on when it causes, you know, family breakdown, crime, homelessness, and other social issues. So it's certainly the time to do it. And that's why the large part of that $1.5 billion is for new acute and subacute mental health beds, for early intervention for young people. And then there's also money for Headspace sites, which is another innovation. Can I just add one other thing? This issue, in fact, I discussed this with Camilla outside. This issue isn't just one of government. Sure, government has an enormous responsibility, and I accept that, and we have perhaps done as well as we should have. But it's also, it's a cultural problem as well. I mean, my father, who died last year, had Lewy body dementia, all right? And he had it for something like 15 years. And it wasn't that there wasn't help available. You know what the problem was, Peter? He didn't want to go and see people about that problem. You know, he was of that generation which were quite stoic, you know, didn't believe in blokes having any assistance. So the problem is partly funding, it's education. Jeff Kennett runs the Beyond Blue, which is a great innovation, and Head Start is another great innovation for young people. But so it's partly about government, and Tony Abbott has made, I think, some great headway, but also partly it is about education and a change in culture in our community.
Thank you. Peter's got another question on mental health, and then I'm going to, which will be directed to to Claire, and then I'm going to invite the other panellists to respond before we leave the mental health issue. But the Coalition policy fact sheet, Brett, on mental health says that almost half the population will experience a mental health episode sometime in their life. The one in five, or 20% of the population aged 16 to 85, experienced an episode in the past 12 months. So it's a huge issue, and one that, as Peter rightly says, there is an unmet demand for services. Peter, your question now to Claire, please.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Moore, thank you. As long ago as 1996, CHOGM agreed that the laws pertaining to mental health need to be harmonised across the various jurisdictions to ensure good patient management and mental health outcomes. This priority has more recently been identified as a key area by the Health and Hospital Reform Commission report and by the Law Reform Commission report. Can you account for why this important human rights issue has not been addressed, and can you tell us when it's intended that the laws will be harmonised, please?
As recently as the two Senate inquiries on mental health that I was fortunate enough to be on, this was also a recommendation from that. And before I continue, can I just share in the acknowledgement of the traditional owners, Rubina, and thank you for your welcome and acknowledgement, and pay my respects to all elders of all cultures. I think that's an important element. But in terms of this question, it is part of the COAG agenda, and certainly it's a COAG issue. There has been progress, but we haven't achieved as a COAG, which is a cooperative arrangement between federal and state government in harmonising the laws. And there's probably a whole lot of reasons for that in terms of state thoughts about what should go first. There's a lot of issues about the law and also the way that the law and the health systems interact. But it's a core part of our strategy, and I'll take the chance to address the strategy question in the same response, to ensure that the COAG system is active and effective. Because whilst we believe that the medical aspects of mental health, which are real and must be considered, that will be addressed in the health reform process that our government has actually introduced. And in that way, we're ensuring that the immediate health aspects, and that includes the hospital aspects, will be a responsibility of the federal government. And that's worked out. And I won't go through the numbers. It's all on the internet about hospital beds and so on, responsibility for servicing and so on. However, it's not just a medical issue. And as Brett quite rightly said, it crosses all areas in terms of the need for communities, the need for families, the need for individuals to feel as though they have safety and respect in their issues of health. And we believe that the community engagement is also a strategy that needs to be enforced. And our strategy in the area of mental health is engagement with community and engagement with people. And through that, in that course, we work with the Mental Health Council of Australia, with consumers groups, with the Ministerial Advisory Group, which is made up of a cross-section of people who are interested in the area, to ensure that government can develop effectively and cooperatively a responsive policy. And that's been the role that we've played. So we certainly have not said that we have actually solved the issues of mental health. Every year of our government, funding has increased, and you can trace that and you can see what's happening. It is not enough, and we've accepted that. We need to continue working in this area, but most importantly, we can't label the issue of mental health and make it surely only a medical issue, because that creates a division in the community. So if you look at our program, what we have released is a strategy around suicide and looking at engagement with young people in particular about that, also with men's groups. Again, not imposing from on high, but working effectively with those people who have the knowledge and the need. And that's our strategy. I can't say that we will harmonise the laws in the next period of time. It is clearly on the COAG agenda and has been. In terms of where we're going, you can trace the progress that has happened. There has been some progress in terms of looking at the way the law operates with people cross-border, because people insist on having their issues in the state in which they are not born. I just cannot believe that. So in terms of the way our system tends to operate, your residential address birth and where you're born seems to be the issue that you're identified with, whereas indeed you can have an issue of severe mental health crisis when you're away from the home that you've actually been treated in the past. And that's one of the core aspects of that difference between states. There already have been extremely positive cooperative arrangement between states, which to our shame were not there in the past. That if you were a New South Wales citizen in Queensland, there were difficulties in you getting the help you needed, because the idea was to ship you back to New South Wales because that's the area from which you came. That is no longer occurring. What has to happen is that there is that interchange between the states. So, Peter, in terms of your specific question, that's a clear aspect where there has been progress. But for me, probably the most exciting aspect is that when we had this forum 3 years ago, the words mental health were not on the agenda. So in terms of actually having people prioritise that in the community, that means there has been progress. We have not spent enough money on it. We need to spend more, but there are more announcements coming. But that can't be singularly a federal government issue.
You must be disappointed that John Mendoza and Petra McGorry have just been so disappointed and angry at Labor's response to the work they did to give the government a whole-of-government plan for mental health.
Can I respond to that, Peter, in terms of a comment?
Yes, and then I'm going to invite Libby and Wendy to...
John Mendoza and Pat McGorry are doing their job, and they're both personal friends for what it's worth, but in terms of process, at the moment we have Pat in his moment of real influence as Australian of the Year doing his job, which is keeping the focus on mental health. I believe that some of the comments they've made have been driven by their passion and have not really understood what our funding program has been, and we've had that discussion. So we have not actually announced a full mental health program, and we've acknowledged that, and that was a bit of a concern in the media when Pat and John jumped in, quite rightly, because it's their job to raise the issue, because both of them are long-term mental health advocates. We don't agree with all the things they've said, but we do not believe that there's any limit to their right to say it, and we continue to work very closely with them. So no matter how it's portrayed in the media, the relationship between Pat McGorry, in his role as a senior advocate for mental health in this country, and John, who has left the Mental Health Advisory Council to operate more independently because he couldn't be as openly critical when he had that position. We continue, and particularly our Minister, Nicola Roxon, continues to work very closely with both of those gentlemen and numerous others. So in terms of the process, we actually have that ongoing relationship as recently as 2:30 this afternoon.
Good. A lot can happen in a few hours, but that's great. I'm going to ask Wendy Francis for Family First, the mental health strategy and priority for your party, please.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be here tonight. As I've travelled around the different communities, what I'm hearing is that they are feeling as if they are totally overlooked by the current government, but by the major parties, and particularly in this area. Some of the communities that have gone to do not have any medical centres at all. So they're small communities, but they're communities with thousands of people in them, like Allera and Killarney, not very far from Brisbane. And the rural communities have got higher suicide rates. If we're talking about extreme manifestation of mental illness, then we're talking the incredibly high suicide rates. Queensland has, for the last more than a decade, has had the highest suicide rates in Australia. And it's even higher in the rural areas. And so these people are being overlooked, and yet at the same time we're wasting so much money on tuck shops that are going to close down at the middle of next year or even at the end of this year. And some of these rural communities are saying to me, we just feel so discouraged because we're not being heard. So they're people, they're real people, and they feel as if the political game has them totally overlooked and lost. And not one of us here tonight would not have been touched by somebody close to us with a mental illness. And so we know how important it is. And in the rural communities, they are feeling totally just isolated and left alone. And so I understand that it's not just money, it's not just governments and the community, but the communities are crying out. And the government, it's not as if there's not money there. The money has been spent. Millions and millions of dollars have been spent. and particularly in the Killarney area, two of the schools that money has been spent on are set for closure at the end of this year or halfway through next year.
So, Wendy, I'm sorry, your policy then on mental health, having heard those concerns?
Minor parties, it's very difficult for minor parties to actually have a huge amount of policies. But what we can do as a minor party is bring balance to the balance of power. And when we look at the policies coming across, that's when we can have comment. I would support anything that would... What I would be wanting to do is to speak up for the people and to say, OK, that's fine, you're doing all this, but what about the people in Killarney? That's what I want to do. So I will be examining policy as it comes, and that's when I can have an impact.
Thanks, Wendy. Libby, for the Greens, mental health, please. Strategy and community engagement. Thanks. And funding.
Can I also just respond to both Brett and Claire? Yes. It was interesting. It was really good that Brett went first because, Brett, you stirred up my emotions and made me go outside just my prepared notes. I have a brother who suffers from mental illness and is on a disability pension. And sure, you can pour money into mental health services, but what really, really stressed him through the Howard years was the attempts to get the disability pensioners off the pension. He lived in fear that he was going to lose his pension and therefore his house. And it's a good example of... And I mean, he's not my only experience. I have a friend whose mother suffered from Alzheimer's and had to be in long-term care. And what both those very close examples said to me is that mental health depends on the family. If you don't have a family who will take care of you, then you do end up wandering the streets. And, I mean, I'm quite proud of my brother that he's in West End, and they do have an interesting network around West End where a lot of people with mental illness support one another. They're real characters. It isn't just the dollars. It isn't just a health policy. It's about a whole-of-government response. And 25 years ago, when I was backpacking in Europe along with some of my other university friends, one of the most amazing experiences I had was when I was in Sweden and staying with a family. And the mother of the household, what did she want to show me that she was most proud of about living in Sweden in the 1980s? She insisted on taking me down to their aged care facility to say, isn't this a beautiful, wonderful, state-of-the-art facility because we really care about our old people in Sweden. And I think everybody was so excited about the election of the Rudd government because they were promised compassion. And that's why people like Pat Mendoza and Pat McGorry have made their public statements. There were these commitments about building a more compassionate society after those really tough, everybody off the dole kind of years. And it just hasn't been fulfilled. And I think that's why the social movements and why the mood of this election is so full of disillusionment and despair as both the major parties talk in the old language. I mean, I do have a Greens policy here. I can give you figures. I did want to say that Senator Rachel Sewart for the Greens chaired the Senate Committee on Suicide, and she has also stated already her great disappointment that the government has not already started work on the report, that it's only accepted some of the recommendations that came out of that Senate committee. And in terms of trying to get a national uniform policy on mental health, the Greens want to see a minister for mental health appointed, somebody who will work full-time on this issue and bring us up to scratch with the rest of the world, or at least with the OECD, where there is proper commitment for aged care and for mental health care so that these people aren't sidelined and totally at the mercy of families, because some people out there don't have families.
Thank you, Libby. We're going to move on to the next topic, but if you're exercised about what you've heard, please use your sheets to write a question which we can feed into discussion a little later.